This article is brought to you by the best-selling book series Write Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How anchoring interacts with the other side's partner. Why your opening number means less than you think it does. In short, anchoring in negotiation sets the psychological reference point that pulls outcomes toward your opening position. But its strength is not fixed. A strong partner on the other side weakens your anchor, because they have a real alternative to compare against. A weak partner on the other side strengthens your anchor, because their options cannot compete with what you are offering. Understanding this relationship before you open your mouth is what separates a prepared negotiator from a lucky one. Definition: anchoring in negotiation is the practice of placing an opening number or position into a conversation so it acts as a psychological reference point. Both parties then tend to adjust from that number rather than from independent assessment, which pulls the final outcome toward the anchor. I have sat in enough rooms over the years to notice something that most people miss about anchoring. They learn the technique, they practice their opening number, they feel confident going in, and then they set their anchor and nothing happens the way they expected. The other side barely flinches. In some cases, they work. The anchor that was supposed to hold the conversation in place turns out to have no grip at all. The reason, almost every time, comes down to one thing: the other side had somewhere else to go. Anchoring does not operate in a vacuum. It operates in a specific context, against a specific person, who has a specific set of alternatives. Understanding how your anchor interacts with those alternatives, what negotiators call partner, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement, is what makes the difference between an anchor that shapes the conversation and one that simply starts it. While anchors do not work the same way twice, most people understand anchoring at the surface level. You go first with a number, the number sticks in the other side's mind, and the final agreement tends to land closer to your opening position than it would have if you had waited. That is real. It is not a trick or a theory. It is a consistent pattern I have seen hold across decades of watching people negotiate. But here is the part that the surface explanation leaves out: anchors work by creating a reference point in the absence of a better one. The moment the other side has a strong alternative, they already have a reference point. It is not your number. It is the deal they can get elsewhere. Think of it this way. You set an anchor the way you might plant a post in the ground. In soft soil, it holds firm. In solid rock, it barely goes in. The other side's partner is the ground you are planting into. If their alternatives are weak, the ground is soft and your anchor takes hold. If their alternatives are strong, the ground resists you, and no amount of force will set that post the way you need it. This is the relationship that most people do not prepare for properly. They spend time calculating their anchor. They spend almost no time assessing the soil. How a strong partner neutralizes your opening position. When the other side has a strong partner, they carry a competing reference point into the room with them. Your anchor must work against that, not alongside it. Here is a situation I have seen play out more than once. A supplier opens a contract renewal with a price that is meant to anchor the negotiation high. The buyer knows that two other suppliers have already quoted competitively. The buyer is not calculating from the supplier's number. They are calculating from their alternatives. The anchor lands, but it lands on solid ground. The supplier has not lost the negotiation yet, but they have started it without the advantage they thought they had. The practical consequence is direct. When you go into a negotiation without understanding the other side's alternatives, you are guessing at how much power your anchor actually carries. If you prepare the way a skilled negotiator prepares, that guess becomes an informed estimate, and your whole approach shifts accordingly. A strong partner on the other side does not mean you abandon anchoring. It means your anchor must work harder. It needs a reason attached to it. A number without justification, when the other side has real alternatives, looks arbitrary. It gives them permission to dismiss it. A number backed by clear logic gives them something to engage with. Even if they do not accept your reasoning, it forces them to argue against it, which keeps your reference point alive in the conversation. What a weak partner does to the same anchor. Turn the situation around. The other side has poor alternatives. Maybe the market is thin, their timeline is tight, or the deal you're offering is genuinely the best available. Their partner is weak. In this situation, your anchor operates with much more freedom. Because they have no strong competing reference point, their opening number becomes the most prominent figure in the room. Their adjustment happens relative to your position, not relative to a market alternative. This is where anchoring shows its full effect. I want to be careful here, because this is where some people get it wrong. A weak batner on the other side does not mean you should anchor as aggressively as possible. It means you've more room to anchor ambitiously, but you still need to stay within a range that does not insult the relationship or trigger a rejection on principle. People will sometimes walk away from a deal that is financially acceptable simply because the opening felt disrespectful. Handling that kind of tension well is a skill in its own right. The principle is this: the weaker their alternatives, the more your anchor defines their perception of what a reasonable outcome looks like. Use that honestly. Push your anchor toward your genuine aspiration point, back it with a clear rationale, and let the conversation develop from there. The situations where this plays out most visibly. There are a few specific scenarios where the interplay between anchoring and batner becomes especially visible and worth examining in detail. Salary negotiation, when the candidate has competing offers. A hiring manager anchors low, expecting the standard adjustment process, but the candidate has a competing offer in writing. That document is a BATNA. It does not matter how confidently the hiring manager stated their number. The candidate's reference point is elsewhere, and the conversation has to move to meet it. Supplier negotiations in a buyer's market. When buyers have multiple qualified suppliers competing for the work, even a well-constructed anchor from a supplier fails to hold. The buyer keeps returning to their alternatives as the real benchmark. The supplier who understands this adjusts their approach. They stop fighting to hold their anchor and start working to weaken the buyer's perception of their alternatives. Internal budget conversations. A team lead anchors their budget request high, expecting to negotiate down to what they actually need. But if the finance director knows there's a competing team making a low request for similar outcomes, the anchor has a BATNA working against it. The way to handle this honestly, and the way I have seen it done well, is to surface the difficult conversation early rather than let the anchor do work it cannot do on its own. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Why negotiators keep getting this wrong. The reason this relationship goes unrecognized so often comes down to preparation habits. Most people prepare by thinking about what they want and what they are willing to accept. Very few people prepare by rigorously examining what the other side can get elsewhere. It feels presumptuous, somehow intrusive, as if assessing the other side's options is crossing a line. But understanding the other side's position is not manipulative. It is respectful. It means you are taking the negotiation seriously enough to engage with it honestly. There is also a confidence problem. People who have invested time in preparing their anchor tend to overweight it. They trust the technique so much that they skip the step of asking whether the conditions exist for it to work. An anchor is a tool. Every tool has conditions under which it performs well and conditions under which it does not. Knowing the difference is what separates a craftsperson from someone who just owns the tools. I have seen this pattern break relationships and deals that should have landed cleanly. If you are working to rebuild something after a difficult breakdown, it is often because someone led with an anchor that felt dismissive given what the other side knew about their own options. What you should do differently before your next negotiation. The analysis leads directly to a set of practical changes in how you prepare. Assess their alternatives before you set your anchor. Ask what the other side can realistically get if this negotiation fails. Is their alternative strong, credible, and immediately available? Or is it weak, distant, or uncertain? Your anchor should be calibrated against that assessment, not against your ideal outcome alone. Pair your anchor with a justification every time. A number alone is an assertion. A number with a reason is an argument. Against a strong BATNA, a bare anchor fails quickly. Against a weak BATNA, a justified anchor holds even more firmly than an unjustified one. The habit of anchoring with reason serves you in every situation. If their BATNA is strong, consider whether to anchor at all. Sometimes the stronger move is to invite them to go first. If they have a strong alternative and you do not know their number, their opening offer will reveal how much weight they are giving their alternative. That information is worth more than the small advantage of anchoring first. Work to understand what weakens their BATNA during a conversation. Alternatives are not fixed. A competing offer that was solid last month may have expired. A market that looked favourable in January may have shifted. Unmet needs that are driving the negotiation can weaken the appeal of alternatives in ways that are not immediately visible. Ask questions. Listen carefully. The ground beneath your anchor can change. When both sides anchor, the one with the better reasoning tends to hold. If you find yourself in a counter-anchor situation, do not simply repeat your number louder. Engage with the reasoning, address it directly, and return to your own justification. In that kind of conflict between competing positions, the conversation rewards whoever prepared the argument, not just the position. The deal method for resolving conflicts applies cleanly here to define the real issue, explore the underlying interests, agree on what matters most, and land on a path forward. It works in negotiation for the same reason it works in conflict, because both are fundamentally about understanding what the other side actually needs before you try to move them. What the relationship between these two forces really tells you. Here is the truth of it. Anchoring is not a power you carry into a room. It is a dynamic that exists between your opening position and the other side's alternatives. The same anchor that dominates one conversation becomes irrelevant in another, not because the technique changed, but because the ground changed. The negotiators I have watched handle this well share one habit: they spend as much time thinking about the other side's position as they do about their own. They do not just ask, "What should I open with?" They ask, "What is this anchor worth, given what they can get elsewhere?" That second question is the one that makes anchoring in negotiation a genuine tool rather than a ritual. Frequently asked questions. What is anchoring in negotiation? Anchoring in negotiation is the practice of introducing an opening number or position that shapes how both parties perceive the range of possible outcomes. The first figure stated tends to pull the final agreement toward it, because people adjust from reference points rather than from independent assessment of value. How does anchoring in negotiation interact with BATNR? Anchoring in negotiation loses power when the other side has a strong BATNR. If they have a solid alternative, your anchor cannot pull them far from the walkaway point. A strong BATNR acts as a competing reference point that reduces the influence of your opening offer significantly. Can anchoring still work when the other side has options? Yes, but it works differently. When the other side has a decent alternative, anchoring must be paired with a credible justification. A number without reasoning looks arbitrary. A number backed by logic gives them a reason to adjust toward your position rather than walk away to their alternative. What happens when both sides anchor at the same time? When both sides open with strong anchors, the negotiation becomes a contest of reference points. The anchor stated first tends to carry more weight, but the anchor backed by clearer reasoning tends to hold longer. Preparation and timing both matter considerably in this situation. How should I adjust my anchor based on the other side's BATNR? If the other side has a weak BATNR, you can anchor more ambitiously because their alternatives are poor. If their BATNR is strong, anchor closer to realistic outcome and invest more in justifying your number. An extreme anchor against a strong BATNR often backfires by triggering an outright rejection. How do I find out what the other side's BATNR is before negotiating? You rarely find out directly. You infer it from their market position, timeline pressures, and how eager they appear. Look at the number of alternatives they are likely to have and how immediately available those alternatives are. The less they need this particular deal, the stronger their BATNR probably is. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.